2020 didn't exactly turn out the way I, or I guess anyone, expected at the beginning of the year, just 12 months ago. For Australia, the year started badly. Pam and I were on our usual extended overseas vacation. This time we were doing a six-week cruise when we learned how the severe drought had given way to the worst bushfires on record. But just as the bushfires were receding, we heard about this virus in China, and when we arrived back in Australia, it was just in time before it reached our shores. Now, if you listen to my podcast, you know that I often speak about the X factor, something we get every year, a term I learned from Don Stammers, an unusual black swan event that comes at us out of the blue. But they don't usually have as profound an impact as coronavirus did. The pandemic caused massive health issues in Australia and around the world. Well, in fact, Australia didn't have it as bad as other places where we've had at least 1.5 million lives lost. And many countries, including ours, has had two waves of coronavirus. It kept many of us confined to our homes. It shut down big sections of our economy. And it drove the biggest fall in world economic activity since the end of World War II, if not the Great Depression. And many major economies saw peak-to-trough falls of their GDP, their economic activity, of 10% to 20%. So Australia did pretty well with our economy only contracting by 7.3% and having picked up pretty quickly afterwards. But we also saw a surge in unemployment and we saw inflation plunge. But we got through it much faster than most expected. And while we're officially out of the recession, we're not out of the woods just yet. So today I'd like to discuss some lessons from last year and see how they're going to affect our economy and our property markets in 2021. And I'm going to do this by having a chat with leading commentator Pete Warchant. Now, remember, in January, rather than two shows a week, there's going to be three episodes of the Michael Yardy podcast published, new shows like this one that you're hearing today, as well as a chance to catch up with some of the best podcasts, some of the best episodes from the past. So welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardy podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Well, we're into a new year, and to be honest, 2020 panned out better than I expected. Of course, last year started off looking great, but then it didn't really turn out like anyone expected when COVID struck us. Today, I'd like to look back on the last year and learn some lessons that we can use moving forward, and to even maybe look at some forecasts with Pete Warchant. Now, Pete's a chartered accountant, chartered secretary, he's got a financial planning diploma, and what I like about Pete is he's actually a doer. He's done it himself. He's used a long-term approach to building businesses, investing in equity, owning a property portfolio. So he's achieved his own financial independence and managed to do it in his early 30s. So who better to give us informed commentary on what's going on? Welcome, Pete.
Cheers, Michael. Always good to be back on.
Well, just to make things clear, you're in the United Kingdom at the moment, not just because of your accent, you're an Australian now, but you're back there and you're locked down there. We're here in Australia. And I know 2020 was dominated by the coronavirus pandemic and the effect it had on our lives, the effect it had on our economy. But now that we're at the beginning of a new year, full of hope, our economy seems to be rebounding. Consumer confidence is back. Sure, it's thanks to massive policy stimulus. And of course, the prospect of a vaccine that's going to allow life to get back to normal is there. In fact, already in the United Kingdom, you've got it. So I think 2021 is going to be the year of recovery. Recovery in our economy, recovery in our property markets, our share markets, and in our lives, Pete.
Certainly. Well, much more so on your side of the world in Australia than in Europe, because in Europe, even though they're rolling out the vaccines in December, it will take a number of months for enough people to be vaccinated. But the fallout from the on-again, off-again lockdowns will be much greater in Europe. Australia really has dodged a bullet. And actually, if you look at you mentioned the policy stimulus there, the budget deficit, it's more than 7% of GDP. It's just a humongous stimulus that's been put in place. Plus, you've got zero interest rates. So all of the pieces of the puzzle are actually in place for a boom in Australia, much less so in, say, the United States or Europe.
Sure. You're right. It was the unprecedented and rapid fiscal stimulus that it protected our businesses, our jobs, our income. The government got it right. I remember in March, April, Scott Morrison said, oh, I'm going to build a bridge to get you across the other side. And he did that. And also, remember, we stopped, there was debt forbearance. In other words, it headed off the defaults in the mortgages and in businesses. There was the monetary stimulus. But interestingly, it also changed our lives in a couple of ways. Looking forward, I think you're right. The world economy is going to be very different, isn't it? COVID scares, partial lockdowns, that's going to lead to a bumpy and slow recovery, particularly in Europe and the United States.
Yeah, I think the one thing that will become increasingly clear, there'll be a lot more trade tensions over the years ahead. I think we've had a lot of globalization over recent years and decades, and there's more tension around the world now. So that will probably continue. I think after the financial crisis, I think some of the fiscal stimulus was switched off too soon, especially in Europe. But I think they probably won't make the same mistake again this time around. So it might take a little while, but the world will probably be much brighter as time goes on.
Well, you talked about the tensions. China, I guess that's the elephant in the room. The pandemic increased tensions in China. It started right from the beginning with, a finger pointing and saying where it came from and how it happened and who did what. But it seems to have set back the globalization. We've got more social tension. And what do you think the fallout of all that's going to be, Pete?
Yeah, it's an interesting one for Australia because we've tied ourselves to the fortunes of China in recent years. So that's a really important one down under. I think the iron ore exports have been very strong. Prices are absolutely sky high now, 8-year high. So that's really positive, especially for Australia's mining states and jurisdictions. But probably there's some tensions there in terms of international students and all of the other types of exports that we typically send to China. So that's definitely a delicate situation. It's unfolding at the moment.
Sure. There was the beef, the meat, the agriculture, even wines are suffering. So it'll be interesting to see what that does and how our government's going to handle that. Maybe some other things to watch. The US politics is going to play out. So before we get on to Australia, I guess what I'm looking at is a couple of the world economic factors that we're not living in isolation, even though having been in a degree of isolation has protected us in many ways. But what do you see with the fallout of the US political situation?
Things have been very, very disrupted in the US this year, in election year. The election result still isn't finalised as we do this podcast, but I think it increasingly looks likely that we'll be seeing a change of regime over there, which is probably a good thing for the stability of the country. But yeah, there's a lot of challenges still to go, and partly simply because of the fallout of COVID, and cases are still very high there. So stock markets tend to be a forward-looking indicator, and they've rebounded very strongly. So that's one positive. And the economy is expanding again, but it's probably a bumpy recovery, as you said.
Sure. I think one of the other effects of COVID is that inflation around the world is going to remain weak. And that's also going to keep bond yields down, interest rates down for quite some time moving forward.
I mean, in Australia, the Reserve Bank has clearly stated that it won't increase the cash rate for at least 3 years. And it may be maybe much longer, depending on how things pan out. And in Australia, that's particularly important for property, because the cash rate has such a direct impact on people's mortgage, you know, mortgage rates at the short end of the curve. So particularly for asset prices, that's a real boosting factor for Australia.
Sure. So the low interest rates are one of the reasons our property markets are rebounding and confidence is back. But at the time of this recording in late December, interestingly, there was already somebody in the media saying, APRA is going to come step in again. If the property market picks up and the Reserve Bank is not going to raise interest rates to slow the market down, APRA is going to tighten the noose again and make lending tighter, which is in fact in direct contradiction to what Josh Frydenberg said, who said in March, April this year, we're going to end up having looser lending criteria.
Yeah, so the responsible lending obligations will be wound back in 2021. So banks will be less constrained in what they can do. I mean, every time property prices start to rise, somebody comes up in the media and says that macroprudential tools need to be deployed. But I mean, this is quite a technical point, but tightening and loosening macropru on and off the whole time is really counterproductive to monetary policy. So unless there's a serious issue, things should be just left in place as they are. So I don't think there will be any significant changes to lending, not least because to date it's been all home buyers rather than investors that have driven the rebound. So that's not a bad thing. And also with record low interest rates, a lot of people have actually paid off their mortgages in full. The land registry figures have shown that in recent months. Credit card debt has been paid back. A lot of people have been boosting their financial buffers and offset accounts. So there's no real reason to tighten up lending standards, at least for the next couple of years.
Sure. So when they did it last time, we got to the point where investors in Sydney were doing 50 to up to 60% of the property transactions. Currently, first home buyers are back, actually more first home buyers than investors, and established home buyers are back. And that's what the government wants, isn't it? Because the wealth effect of having your home, having your castle, having equity there has lots of spin-off.
Yeah, I mean, this is the contradiction of what the media is saying. The government has put in place a first home loan deposit scheme for low deposit borrowers to get onto the housing ladder. And then the media reports that you know, we should be changing loan to value ratios. Well, it can't be both. So I suspect the government will win this one.
I think they will. And I guess another spin-off side effect of coronavirus is the hit to immigration in Australia. It's hard to see that picking up for a couple of years. But on the other side, there isn't the large construction pipeline with lots of new dwellings coming there. So I can't see an oversupply looming in our big capital cities.
No, it's a really interesting dynamic, actually. The lack of tourism and international students, that's clearly a negative. But on the other hand, and this is why the recovery has surprised people and it's been so strong. I mean, typically Australians spend an awful lot of money overseas, and that just hasn't happened this year because the border closures. So it might be maybe March 21 when borders actually begin to reopen. But there's a lot of Australians actually returning home. There's a cap on the number, but I think there won't be the big oversupply that we've sort of seen. There was an oversupply of apartments for a period, but I don't think that's likely to be an issue because the pipeline, as you said, is now much smaller.
Sure. And I guess one of the positive effects of coronavirus and the lockdowns is the faster embracing of technology seems to have made us more productive. I know I am. There's less business travel. There's more online learning. That'll be interesting to see what happens to our universities, Pete, and whether they're going to make up for the lack of international students by doing more online learning.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor, and there'll be more online and virtual meetings. I think the work from home trend, I mean, it was happening anyway, and this year's accelerated it. But I was listening to, for example, Mike Cannon-Brooks at Atlassian saying that going forward, they'll most likely have a combination. They'll still have office-based employees, but maybe people will do some time working from home or remotely. And they're actually in the process of building a billion-dollar tech hub right in the centre of Sydney. So the death of the CBD, I don't think that's going to be a trend. Once borders reopen, I think you'll see the CBDs will be as busy as they ever were. And in fact, down your way, Amazon, they will actually fund a $1.5 billion tower right on Collins Street, and Google's at Pyrmont. So I think things will probably return to a much more normal state than people think at the moment.
I agree with you. I also think one of the challenges with remote workers may actually push themselves out of a job, because if you can do the work remotely from Gosford or the Gold Coast, you can probably do it from the Philippines or India as well. So be careful what you ask for. You make it yourself into a bit of trouble.
Yeah, and that's actually been one of the factors that has kept inflation and wages growth down, is that a lot more work now can be outsourced, virtual employees, or just simply sending contract work to cheaper countries. So that has had an impact on the size of the global labor force. So yeah, it's a factor that has really held down inflation in recent years.
Now, the governments are taking on extra debt. They've got to repay it somehow, and it's scared some people off. But debt's the cheapest it's ever been. At the level they're borrowing, which is cheaper than what you and I can do, I'm not too concerned about that. What about you?
Not for Australia. I mean, Australia's got very... we've had a very conservative level of government debt over the years. We've been running small deficits compared to other parts of the world. But even in countries like the UK, where there's very high levels of government debt, interest rates are just so low now. And in fact, the UK's five-year gilt actually fell to zero this year. So it's not what we learned in economics all those years ago. We used to think that very high levels of debt would show up higher interest rates, but it just hasn't happened. So it's forcing a lot of people to have a bit of a rethink about the levels of sustainable debt, but it's not really an issue for Australia, where debt levels are very modest.
Well, on the one side, there's the government debt. On the other side is their income. And it's been interesting that New South Wales is talking about phasing out stamp duty. Victoria has already brought that in, but for a really short period of time. It depends upon whether it's new, whether it's established, the price point as well. And that's more an incentive for a short period of time to get the property market ticking over. What are your thoughts on the New South Wales idea of maybe swapping stamp duty, or giving you a choice? They're still in consultation, but giving you a choice to swap stamp duty for long-term land tax payments.
Yeah, there are certain ideas that come along and they just get assumed to be a panacea or a fix-all, and land tax is long been one of the most popular ideas. But I think sometimes people don't necessarily fully think through the implications of a change, because if there's no stamp duty, that reduces the barrier to people bidding up prices. It's just more money that can go into housing prices. It could increase flipping. I think land tax is a very elegant tax in theory. The problem is, if the land tax is too high, it actually reduces the base of what's being taxed. So hence why it hasn't been a broad-based tax in recent times. So, well, we'll have to see what happens. But if you remove stamp duty, that's just going to increase speculative activity, I would have thought.
I agree with that. But I'm also a bit more sceptical. At this time, the governments need more money. If they're giving it back in with one hand, they're taking it with another. So the suggestion that people are going to be better off by not paying stamp duty after 2 or 3, 4 years, the land tax is probably going to end up costing more, and it'll be an ongoing continuous flow of income for the government, as opposed to the ups and downs of stamp duty. But again, it's all under consultation at the moment. What's going to happen if I choose not to pay stamp duty and then I sell or flip in a couple of years' time? Does that particular property have to, does the next person have to keep paying land tax on it, or do they have a choice of how they do it? Lots of questions still in the air.
Yeah, and as we often find with tax, you replace one problem with two others, and it's often a lot more complex than people think it is. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that gets talked about a lot, so we'll just have to see what actually happens in terms of the arrangements.
Sure. Now, at this time of the year, everyone's making forecasts. They're wondering what 2021 is going to bring for the economy. We've already had a few thoughts about property, which I'd like to have a chat with you about. And we know forecasts are wrong. They're usually wrong, but we need them. Just have a look at how very wrong the forecasts made in March, April last year were. Now, I guess people could be excused because it was unprecedented times. No one knew how coronavirus would pan out. But just looking back in history in general, property forecasters got it wrong. Well, some in particular, the perma bears, they must be very disappointed at the moment.
Yeah, so I think this is one of the problems with forecasts. And 2020 was a really good case in point, is that you get these events come along that nobody had in their models, and then the models all proved to be completely useless. I mean, a couple of good reads for people on that. Nassim Taleb, The Black Swan, he talks about how a black swan event can just render forecasts completely worthless, essentially. I suppose Taleb might argue that a pandemic isn't really a black swan because we've had dozens of them over the centuries. But yeah, it just shows the unexpected can really have a major impact. And another of his reads, Anti-Fragile, is a really good read for people in terms of just being prepared for shocks like a COVID or any type of exogenous shock, for example, in terms of being prepared and being agile, because what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Well, I learned about the X factor before the black swan from Don Stammer, who used to write in the BRW, and then it became the Financial Review. I can't remember. I think he writes for The Australian now, and he's brought it out again, where every year there was a X factor, and it's nothing to do with the music show, something that comes out of the blue, an unexpected risk. And then separately, I've learned from Morgan Housel, who used to write for The Motley Fool and now Collaborative Fund, about the concept of once a year, the world breaks. Once every 10 years, sorry, once every decade, the world breaks. I guess that was the global financial crisis in 2008-09. This time around, it's coronavirus. But I found this year, or last year, I should say, 2020. See, I got tripped up because we're recording this right at the end of 2020, aren't we? Strategic investors protected themselves from these ups and downs because they owned the best assets by having financial buffers in place, by setting up the right ownership structures, by having insurance, by obtaining holistic advice. So I came into this downturn with strong financial buffers. I didn't know what was going to happen to my cash flow. I didn't know what was going to happen to my property portfolio. I didn't know what was going to happen to my business. Interestingly, though, I didn't need those. Fortunately, I got through it very well, but I slept much better, Pete, because I actually had set myself up by expecting the worst and being prepared for the worst, I guess, but looking forward to the best.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. We often talk about focusing on processes over outcomes because a lot of different things can happen. And I think people would always be well served to look at the attributes of survivorship and look at people who've been around for a long time and been successful over a long time because, as they say, success leaves clues. There was a famous story about World War II bombers, and you know, they came back with all these bullet holes in the petrol tanks and the fuselage, but the planes that returned never had any bullet holes in the engines. And I guess that led on to the realization that you should look at the things that have survived rather than the things that haven't returned or stuck around. So I guess that probably ties back in as well to what Nassim Taleb says about, you know, the Lindy effect. You know, if something has worked for 100 years, it's probably going to work for another 100 years. So, which is, I guess, in the property sense, that's why we tend to look for proven performing markets. We look for established properties rather than new sort of new high-rise towers. Yeah, there's a lot of these concepts that just come round over and over again in a cycle, as you said.
So look for what's always worked rather than what's working just now. Now, at this time, the media has been asking me a lot of questions as well about what my forecasts are, and I actually don't forecast. A couple of reasons why. I've got an understanding and a feeling of why, but I've seen how other people forecast as well. And I think that disappoints them a bit because I say that I don't make forecasts. Instead, I have got expectations. And Pete, there's a big difference between forecasts and expectations. You see, I expect there's going to be another recession in the next decade, but I don't know when that's going to be. I expect the property markets are going to boom over the next couple of years and then prices will slow down again, but I don't really know when that's going to be. I expect some of the investments I make are going to do well, but I don't know which ones they're going to be. I know interest rates are going to rise, but probably not for a number of years. In fact, I don't know when. And I guess there is going to be another one of those world-breaking events sometime in the future. And when people ask me about that, Peter, I'm saying it's not really a contradiction. It's not a form of cop-out. There's a big difference between expectations and forecasts. And expectations and anticipation of how something's going to play out in the future based on my perspective or based on what we just said, how it's worked in the past. Well, a forecast's putting a time frame on that expectation. Now, of course, in an ideal world, people want to know what's going on. And when you see the forecasts from the banks or some of the other economists, they bring three or four different forecasts in depending upon what a number of different scenarios are. But I know there's always going to be another X factor. But by having expectations, it's made me a better investor because I know that things are going to break are going to go wrong. And so therefore I look for the long-term views, as we said a couple of moments ago, by only investing in investment-grade properties, having the right structures in place, knowing what's moving forward. So I know, though, that a good colleague of yours, a friend of yours, Doran Pelig, and from RiskWise, who does a lot of great research in quite some depth, has come up with some forecasts for 2021. So would you like to just share what some of his thoughts are?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess these guys are RiskWise. One of the reasons I've always followed their research is that they're independent and they live and die on the quality of their work. And it's not always positive or negative, because you mentioned there some of the sort of perma-bear forecasts earlier in 2020. You know, there was prices are going to fall 40%. Some of the scenarios were 80%. I mean, just plain ridiculous forecasts. But one of the problems is that the system doesn't clear out bad forecasters. You would look at that and say, well, if you can't forecast prices to within 40 or 50%, it's a complete waste of time. But in a sense, the system rewards extreme forecasts because they're more likely to get a headline. So anyway, on to RiskWise.
Actually, before you do, if I could just say, Pete, that that's always surprised me, and it still does, because there are a number of them, and we won't necessarily name them. And look, I believe they believe what they're saying. I'm not suggesting they're bad people, but boy, have they got a big following. You see their weekly YouTube channel and they get 10,000 people listening to their forecasts, unless they're hacking it. And I don't believe that they'd be doing that. People seem to want to hear these negative forecasts. Why is that?
Well, it's just some people, there is always a demand for it. And where there's a demand, the supply will follow. So it won't ever go away. But I wouldn't, my next door neighbor is a plumber. He's actually better at forecasting than a lot of the people out there. It's just crazy, some of the stuff that people follow and believe. And it's actually one of the really important points, and this is what I was sort of hinting at before, is that one of the phrases that Taleb talks about is hormesis. You know, it's an ancient Greek phenomenon where they realized that, you know, actually going through life with no downturns, no volatility, no trials and tribulations, that's not a good thing, because you don't build up any resilience. And so like if you get a callus on your hand, you know, that's your body coming back stronger. And it's exactly the same with the financial system. You actually need recessions and downturns to test the resilience of households and businesses. And Australia's really had that this year, as has the whole globe. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because just like, a weight trainer realizes that, you know, because of the super compensatory response, you come back stronger. And that's exactly what will happen next year. Australia's had a very tough year, but the rebound will be very strong as a result. Well, let's look at what RiskWise said. So they... for Sydney and Melbourne, they're forecasting 8 to 12% price increases for 2021. So that will put new highs back in the frame for both markets. So Melbourne's had a patchy year because of its lockdown, but the rebound will be very strong. I think they think more so for houses than units in 21 because of the lack of international travel. And that's just having a knock-on impact to rental markets and the demand for city apartments at this time. It may change as the year goes on. And Brisbane, well, the market is already strong. You can see it just at open home. So the forecast there is 6 to 10% for Brisbane, but it could easily be more just based on what's already happening. And I think quite likely with the way iron ore prices have been travelling in recent weeks, I think finally Perth might experience a rebound as well, but much harder to predict given that it's so driven by China and mining and iron ore prices.
Mm. So, of course, these are overall prices, and we've got an overall, I guess, forecast for median prices, which means we've got to remember that there are markets within those markets. The apartment market's different to the house market. The inner city is different to the outer suburbs. Those areas where there's established properties, where people have paid off their mortgages, where there's very little debt, are going to perform differently to the outer suburbs, where people are still going to have higher levels of unemployment and already be experiencing a little bit of mortgage or financial stress. But overall, they're good indications that 2021 is going to be a great year for property.
Yeah, I think it's 2020, very low volumes, not much stock on the market, lots of uncertainty, particularly through April and May. But the rebound, if you look at, as you mentioned, consumer confidence is at a 10-year high. House price expectations are miles above the long-run average now. So people have benefited from the stimulus. So lots of household savings and buffers in place. So I think the only real piece in the puzzle that would actually lead to an out-and-out boom is just the international travel. I think if you put that factor in as well, then things will really tee off. At the moment, that's just the one constraining factor.
Interestingly, I read that luxury car sales have gone up 12.4%. And there was an interesting graph from Commonwealth Bank or ComSec linking luxury car sales and showing it was a very similar trend to housing market increases. Now, I'm not sure what comes first. Are people buying themselves luxury cars at the moment because we feel we've got to be rewarded because we've had a tough year, a tough time? Is it because we've got more money stashed away at the moment because we can't spend it overseas? But I think people are also going to, as they feel more comfortable, just say, hey, I actually deserve to live in a nice environment as well.
Yeah, so the government has done a really good job on tipping a lot of stimulus into the hands of households. There was also early superannuation release. But normally, the big ticket items in a year is often for Australians is an overseas trip. And that's just been, it's been completely written off this year. So people are finding other places to put their money. Property is one, but luxury car sales are on the up now quite strongly. So and this is where the border closures do actually, for the Aussie dollar, are actually a net benefit because since around 2006, more Australians typically travel overseas than come in as visitors. So it's actually a plus in some ways, which is quite counterintuitive and not what you might expect.
Sure. Well, I read that Australians spend around $63 billion a year on international travel and also on domestic travel. And stockbroking house UBS suggested that probably 85% of that's going to be reallocated to other spending. So sure, we've saved some money, but there's so much cash stashed away that it's being spent. And we're seeing that with the banks now regularly showing credit card spending. We are back to spending, and that's good for our economy.
Yeah, definitely. And also coastal property markets is the other place that showed up this year. Just, certain places on the northern New South Wales coast and Byron and places like that. A lot of people, they wanted to be away from the cities this year, and that's just really driven a lot of demand out to those areas. But as I say, I think it'll be a different story once work starts up again in 21 and once borders open.
Sure. So people have been buying themselves, the wealthy have been buying themselves a holiday home rather than going overseas. I also know a lot of people have been doing the Google searches, the realestate.com and domain searches on interstate property, on moving to regional Australia. But it will be interesting to see as life goes on whether that was just a nice idea at the time, a nice fad, and people will just get on with life in their current neighbourhood.
Well, it would be against the trend of something that has been going on for decades and centuries of more and more people moving to the cities. But I think for Australia, it's just a numerical thing. You generally find new immigrants to Australia go to Sydney and Melbourne, including people like myself, because those are the big cities where we've heard of them, but also that's where the opportunities are for employment and career. So take away the immigration and things look a lot different, because internally people do move to Southeast Queensland or elsewhere. But I think you switch immigration and the tap back on, then suddenly Sydney and Melbourne will be the places to be again.
Well, Australia is also going to be the place to be. 2021 is going to be a good year for all of us. So thanks for your insights, Pete, and I look forward to having you back regularly to just see how all this plays out. Hope it's going to be a great 2021 for you and your family, for Heather and the kids.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks. I think it is. I mean, people might say, oh, you're always positive about Australia, but I can tell you, certainly compared to what's happening in Europe over here, I mean, Australia has just been unbelievably well placed now. You know, it's really tough for Europe, but Australia, for whatever reasons, whether it was luck or skill or a combination of the two, has done superbly. So I think a good year ahead.
Well, not just Europe, because I was speaking to a joint good friend Tom Corley the other day, and the United States is suffering badly as well, not just from the political situation, but from the health crisis of COVID, which now seems to be coming to the fore as people are really realising how bad it is there.
Yeah, I think I've been following Tom's Twitter feed, and he's got some very strong political views, which are always worth a watch.
Yes, he has. Okay, thanks a lot. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Pleasure. Cheers, Michael.
Well, that session I just shared with Pete should give you confidence that 2021 is going to be a great year, and a year that maybe you should be considering taking advantage of the new wave of the property cycle and getting involved in property. Now, before I share my mindset message with you, I just want to explain to you that not every property is going to go up in value. And as we said when Pete mentioned the RiskWise forecasts, that's overall. So to get an average growth of 5, 6, 7, 8% in Melbourne, Sydney, and better in Brisbane, that means that half the properties are not going to do that. In fact, moving forward, some properties are going to significantly outperform others. And so if you want to develop financial freedom through property, you're going to need much more than the buyer's agent who just knows their local market. You're going to need more than the property strategist. In my mind, you're going to need a holistic approach to ensure you grow your wealth, you protect your wealth, and you can pass it on. And that's what my team at Metropole does. So if you're interested in taking advantage of the new property cycle, why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do, and leave your details so we can have a chat with you. Now, I don't know when you're listening to this podcast. We'll be closed for the first couple of weeks of January, but get yourself set for this new property wave, because we can customize the solution to meet your specific needs using our time-tested methodology for acquiring wealth. And we help beginning investors buy their first property, experienced investors add to their portfolio, and sophisticated investors, by helping them manufacture growth, they become property developers. So if you're looking to buy, invest, renovate, develop, you'll benefit from our services. Go to metropole.com.au and we'll give you some direction, some certainty, and wealth-producing results in 2021.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message for today, I'd like to say that you've made history. We're into 2021, and believe it or not, over the last year, you made history. 2020 is likely to be the year that you're going to want to forget, but that won't be easy to do. So how are you going to remember it? I'd be suggesting you have a look at how well our country's come through this, as Pete and I discussed a bit earlier on. I'd like you to remember how well you have survived it as a person, and I'd like you to be grateful, because when you're grateful, when you appreciate what you've got, when you appreciate where you live, when you appreciate what the world's offering you, you're going to be a very wealthy person. You see, in years to come, your children, your grandchildren, they're going to study this time of COVID-19. They're going to learn how rainbows were seen as a sign of hope. They're going to hear how people came together to cheer, to clap the amazing people who saved lives and kept our country going. Our children and grandchildren are going to learn in school. I'm sure there's going to be movies made about this. They're going to hear it's going to be a time when the world slowed down, polluted skies cleared, and animals reclaimed the streets. Looking back in history, people are going to see it was a time when families spent time together, playing together, having fun together. A time when we appreciated our one walk a day. Boy, I remember that. I actually became fitter during the lockdown and enjoyed my walk a day down the beach here in Brighton. 2020 is going to be remembered as a day when we got to know our neighbours. We got to understand our community, our neighbourhood better. We came together to help those in need. 2020 will be remembered as the year when we had the power of the hug. When seeing friends and family meant seeing their faces on screen, on Zoom, on the computer rather than face to face. It'll be remembered as the year when schools went online, when parents became teachers. I know that happened with my kids. And it's a time when the world went a little bit crazy. We did silly things like stockpile toilet paper. So how are you going to remember 2020? What are you going to leave as a legacy to future generations? As you've got some time over this summer break, I'm going to suggest you do something about it because you were part of history. Write a diary. Maybe you keep a scrapbook. Create a time capsule do a video, a film, keep a record of it somehow or other, because you are part of history, and that's going to be important in the future. It's going to be a time no one will forget. So as we enter into a new year, stay safe, be creative, have fun, be kind, and most importantly, be thankful. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Pete Wargent and the Mindset Message. And if you got some benefit from it, considering how much confusion there is about what's ahead this year, please share this episode with somebody. There's a share button on every podcast app. Help somebody else who'd like to know what's going on in the world as well. Help me in my quest to make as many people as financially independent and give them the ability to become more successful in life by sharing the Michael Yardney podcast. Now, I'm going to share it with you 3 times a week over January because a lot of people have a bit of extra time apart from new episodes like the one you heard today. I'm going to be sharing with you some of the best episodes from the last 3 years. Watch out for us in your inbox 3 times a week. And in between, you can catch up with me on social media. Just go to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And if you'd like to find out a bit more, oh, YouTube as well. And if you'd like to find out, let's just look for Michael Yardney. But if you'd like to find out a bit more about property and get my insights, why not join our private Facebook group? Just go to Facebook and look for the Property Update Facebook group, where I share exclusive content with my community. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?